Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIES podcast. This one's being brought to you from the GAS programme. My name's James Henderson. I'm a Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. And with me today, I've got my colleagues, Jack Sharples and Anouk Honoré, who are both senior fellows. And we're going to be talking about the quarterly gas market review, which has just been published and which they were the joint authors of. So Jack, Anouk, welcome to the podcast again.
Hello, thank you very much. Good to be back.
Hello, thank you.
Okay, well, look, there's plenty to talk about, so let's get straight into it. Jack, let me come to you first. I mean, it's interesting that in the introduction to the quarterly, Bill Farren-Price, the new head of the gas programme, notes that we kind of went into the winter highlighting some risks, highlighting potential for price spikes, pointing out the market was pretty tight. In fact, what happened was that prices remained pretty low. And actually, even in the face of some geopolitical uncertainty, obviously Israel-Gaza, Red Sea issues, some industrial action in Australia, we've still got pretty low prices. So were we overly cautious? You know, what's the situation now? And how do you reflect on what we were looking at before the winter and what actually happened?
I don't think we were overcautious. I think that at the start of winter, the market risks were what they were. And most of the risk of any major price movement were all to the sort of the upward pressure on prices. So I don't think we were overcautious. But what I do think is interesting is that over the winter that we just saw, that actually the winter sort of highest prices were at the very start of winter, at the beginning of October, and that they were driven predominantly by what you might call either geopolitical events or market news, precisely as of the type that you mentioned. And that's very different to last winter. So in the winter of 2022-23, TTF front month prices peaked at over $45 per MMBTU in early December on the back of a cold snap. And we didn't really have that. So in the winter just passed, we got up to a peak of about $16 in late October, driven by market news rather than supply-demand fundamentals, and then a decline that went through right until late February. In terms of where we are now, we're at just over $10 per MMBTU, which is down from about $14 in mid-April last year. So things have definitely settled down.
So interesting you say now, and I should highlight for listeners that now is the 19th of April. At 12:30 UK time, so just to date stamp us, because obviously prices are moving around reasonably rapidly. Just before we move on, I mean, how do you reflect on the fact that the incidents we saw, the Hamas attacks, the Red Sea, didn't really affect markets, particularly the Red Sea, didn't really affect markets that much at all? How do you reflect on that?
So for the Red Sea, I think what we saw were some Qatari volumes that would otherwise have come to Europe being redirected to Asia, but other volumes taking the longer route around the Cape of Good Hope. We were probably fortunate in the sense, really, that LNG shipping via the Panama Canal is curtailed at the moment due to drought issues that are unlikely to ease until later in the year. So actually what you had was a bit more US LNG perhaps locked into the Atlantic basin, which then eased the pressure on allowing Qatari LNG to be redirected to Asia. So there was a bit of a balancing impact going on there. But I think in broader terms, the fact that you have these significant curtailments through the Red Sea and the Suez Canal on the one hand and the Panama Canal on the other hand, and yet the market remains pretty well balanced, is a sign really of just how much supply is available in the Pacific and Atlantic basins and how well the LNG market is functioning. One thing I would add, things seem to be somewhat benign at the moment. We've ended winter with very strong stocks and we seem to be quite well balanced, but I don't think that should disguise the fact that that balance is a relatively fine one and the global LNG market is far from oversupplied. And that's why we're seeing some price reaction to geopolitical events, including over the last couple of weeks as tensions ratchet up between Israel and Iran.
Okay, a point well made. And we'll come back to that, I'm sure, later in the podcast. For now, let's sort of start to dig into a little bit of the detail. And let's start in Europe, which I think is still really the balancing market, isn't it? So, Jack, talk to us a little bit about the supply, you know, indigenous production, pipeline imports, and what's been going on there.
Well, I think it's good that you note production and pipeline imports first, because those are effectively baseload supply to Europe. And then the levels of European demand are what really drive our call on marginal supply, namely LNG and storage. So I think we should come back to that later. But in terms of production, production continues to decline in Europe. Over the winter past, we were down about 16% year on year, which equates to about 6 BCM. So not a small volume, let's say. We obviously, the big sort of market event was the closure of Groningen on the 1st of October. But some good news at the end of winter, with TotalEnergies announcing the restart of gas production in Denmark now that the renovation of the Tyra offshore platform has been completed. And so actually, that planned 2 BCMA from Denmark starting now is slightly higher than the 1.5 BCM that we had out of Groningen in the first 9 months of last year before it closed. So that's quite positive. Pipeline supply actually more positive, 5 BCM, about 5% higher year on year. We also had slightly smaller physical re-exports from the EU to Ukraine by about 1 BCM. So effectively, you had about 6 BCM more of pipeline supply, which precisely offset that 6 BCM decline in production. Within that, we saw higher volumes from Russia and Norway year on year, particularly from Norway, where we've overcome quite a lot of the maintenance that really dogged supply in the summer months of last year. A little bit lower from North Africa, very flat from Azerbaijan, with the Trans-Adriatic pipeline operating at full capacity. But the headline really is that production and pipeline supply has been flat year on year. And so therefore, as I say, the call on marginal supply was very much determined by levels of demand.
Okay, thanks. Well, I don't want to call your analysis boring, but flat is flat, so not the most exciting outcome, but some detail behind it, of course. But let's get to the interesting stuff then. Anoot, let me come to you. You've been following the kind of trends in European demand for a long time, but particularly, you know, over the last couple of years post the invasion of Ukraine and all the drive by the EU to bring demand down and reduce reliance on Russian gas, of course. And we now go into a third year of demand, well, not even remaining low, but continuing to decline. So how do you see the picture over the past sort of 3 to 4 months?
Overall gas demand this winter, which I should say covered the period from the beginning of October to the end of March, very much continued the trend with a total decline of 4 BCM in Europe. Gas demand remained weak in the three main sectors, but really the power sector was the main driver for the year-on-year decline. Now, if we take a step back, the annual demand in Europe is now around 390 BCM, which is roughly 100 BCM less than what we had 2 years ago. This is remarkable considering the size of the market. And of course, it raises questions as to whether some major demand losses may be permanent. Now, I should add, the quarterly covers Europe as EU27 plus the UK, but anecdotally, the EU27 easily met its gas demand reduction target of 15%, which, as you know, covers the period between April 2023 and to March 2024, which even had 14 BCM to spare, so not even making the maximum that they were allowed to use.
Okay, well, I mean, you've mentioned the question about reduction or destruction. Let's dig into that a little bit more, because I think that's what's really interesting market participants, isn't it? Are we just seeing a reaction to high prices that can basically be reversed, or are we seeing industry shutting down, moving away, and, you know, that gas demand really having been removed forever? Because as you say, 100 BCM, that's just a huge number. If that's gone forever, then that's very dramatic. So what's your answer to that question?
It's not an easy answer. Undoubtedly, there has been some demand destruction, I would say, especially in the industrial and in the power sector, probably not so much in the building sector just yet. Now, quantifying how much is complex, especially considering the conjunctural events that have blurred the picture of the past few months. Now, to give you a few examples, some of the decline in gas demand was simply triggered by gloomy economic indicators, which impact, as you know, gas use in the industrial sector, but also contribute to keep electricity demand low. And in this sector, we also had, incidentally, the return of the French nuclear fleet since 2023, which has influenced the use of non-renewable capacity, which includes, of course, gas-fired power plants. And of course, Europe has been very lucky with generally warm winters these past 2 years, which has limited the need for gas in heating just simply because there was no need for it. So, to answer your question and give you maybe a rough estimate regarding reduction versus destruction of gas demand in Europe, I would say we are probably now looking at 65% reduction, 35% destruction. But of course, the longer it takes, the more likely any reduction is going to turn into a destruction, especially in the industrial sector in Europe and, of course, in the context of the energy transition.
Okay, well, look, let's dig into that industrial point, because that's really interesting. I mean, which industries are you looking at and thinking actually that could be destruction now? Are there any particular ones that are looking like they've gone for good?
Gone for good is a very strong term. We do know, well, first of all, let me start with a few simple explanation. The major gas demand user in the industrial sector in Europe is the chemical sector. And this one is definitely not looking too good. We had a lot of things that have been happening, and that includes last year and, well, over the past 2 years, actually, improving efficiency in this sector. And that included operational efficiencies, but also just shutting down some of the firms that were the least efficient. That's one way of improving your efficiency. We also have seen a lot of switching, and that means switching towards further electrification and renewables, so in line with what should be happening for the transition, but also switchings towards oil products, especially LPG, switching in various sectors in the industry. So interestingly, adding some flexibility that we used to have maybe 1-2 decades ago in Europe and that we had lost. So this improved switchability is potentially just a sign of a reduction, and it will come back. Gas demand will come back depending on the profitability of the different fuels. We also seen some closure of demand production in Europe. There has been some shutdowns. There has been very limited relocation, it seems, so far. But what has been happening is shutting down the production in Europe and moving the production elsewhere, again, playing with the firm's availability to use various markets. To give you an example, Yara, for instance, producing ammonia in the States for the past few months, rather than producing ammonia in Europe for its fertilizer production. So there's a lot of flexibility that seems to have appeared in the industrial sector that we may not have seen in the last decades or 2 decades in Europe. So this is an interesting bit. This is part of the demand that might come back in the next few months, but again, depending very much on the profitability of gas against other fuels or against other regions.
Okay, that's fascinating to hear about the flexibility that companies are using to move their production around. So we'll obviously watch that pretty closely. Okay, look, Jack, let me come back to you now. And you know, before we talk about the rest of 2024, let's have a quick look at some of the other major component parts here. So your last analysis was kind of slightly boring and flat. I know that the analysis of storage is more exciting because I've read the quarterly and I know there were some records, and this is our favorite topic. So tell us the exciting news about storage.
Yeah, so obviously I've been banging the drum on European storage for some time now. And exactly as you say, some very exciting records set in the past winter. So first of all, we began what you might call the gas industry winter, 1st of October, with storage stocks at record levels, 101 BCM. So first time we've exceeded 100 BCM for the start of winter officially. And then actually we went on to add another 4.2 BCM to that, so that actually stocks peaked at about 105 BCM in early November. So an absolute record and a huge volume to have in storage, particularly when you place that in the context of, as Anouk says, a European market of about 390 BCMA. So when you've got more than 25% of your annual demand in storage at the start of winter, that's a very positive thing. Now, the storage withdrawals over the winter were actually 14% higher year on year. So the net withdrawal between the 1st of October and 31st of March. And that was the first year on year increase in winter net withdrawals since the winter of 2020-21, so before the crisis. As a result, even though we took out a little bit more year on year, the fact that we started the winter with so much in storage meant that we also ended the winter with record stocks of just over 61 BCM. So again, a very substantial volume there. Now, looking ahead, that means that we've got a pretty clear idea of how much we need to inject over the coming summer. But certainly that storage over the past winter helped provide a buffer, really, which will have undoubtedly contributed to prices not spiking during the coldest winter periods.
Indeed, yeah, some really interesting stats around storage, and obviously a huge reflection on the fact that the EU's made a big deal about, you know, having these mandated levels. Now, I think the other really interesting thing I found in the quarterly was the discussion about European LNG imports. I mean, of course, Europe's built a lot of infrastructure. There was a dramatic surge in 2022 as we saw Russian gas being replaced. But I think it's interesting to note that, you know, LNG send out over this winter has actually gone down year on year. So Talk us through that. That was a surprise to me when I read that.
Yeah, so that's very much the result of moving parts in other areas. So as Anouk has just said, demand was rather weak over the winter just gone. My very boring analysis of production and pipelines show that supply from those sources was effectively flat year on year. And given that storage withdrawals were also slightly higher year on year, when you take all of that together, then obviously the result is a lower call on LNG as a marginal source of supply. Now, to put some numbers on that, I not only track sort of unloadings of cargoes into Europe, but also the send out from regas terminals, because that's where you really see the contribution to supply into the grid. Now, that send out was down by 9.8 BCM, so 12% year on year. Within that, we saw a quite interesting recalibration in Northwest Europe. So obviously, during the height of the crisis in mid-2022, you had the UK acting as a bit of a land bridge for Northwest Europe. So LNG was coming into the UK, being regasified, and then being re-exported to Belgium and the Netherlands via the BBL and the IUK pipeline. Now, if you look at the winter just past, send out from UK regas terminals was almost 7.5 BCM lower year on year. Send out from EU27 terminals was 2.5 BCM lower. But the new regas capacity in the northwestern part of the EU, so you're talking Eemshaven and the three German FSRUs, meant that less of that LNG was being regasified in the UK and then re-exported to the EU. So actually the net pipeline exports from the UK to the EU in the winter just past were down by almost 6 BCM. So actually, although UK regas send out was 7.5 BCM lower, you can knock off 6 BCM of that because that was volumes that were not needed to be re-exported to Europe. So the effective UK LNG import was only 1.5 BCM down. But LNG imports effectively into the EU, that shift from using the UK as a land bridge to using the new FSRUs, meant that LNG imports into the EU were actually up by about 3.5 BCM. So that shift in volume. So it was a bit of a recalibration. But overall, yes, the send out from regas terminals was down substantially. And that, again, by having less call on your marginal source of supply, exerted downward pressure on prices.
Okay, so interesting. I mean, so we're taking less LNG into the EU, more, therefore, for the global LNG market. So what did that mean then for the use of LNG and demand for it in Northeast Asia, for example?
Well, again, we were quite fortunate, really, that it was a relatively mild winter with rather subdued demand in the what you might call the less price-sensitive markets of Northeast Asia. Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and Singapore. If we recall, the last time we had a very cold Northern Hemisphere winter was at the beginning of 2021, where you had very strong demand in Northeast Asia, but you also had strong demand in Europe. A lot of LNG was diverted away from Europe, and Europe drew heavily down on its storage. This past winter was rather the opposite of that. Mild across the Northern Hemisphere, less LNG demand in Northeast Asia, but also actually less call on both LNG and storage in Northern Europe. Now, between those two elements of a lower European call and less Northeast Asian demand in the less price-sensitive markets has meant that China has been able to continue its year-on-year growth without really substantially tightening the global LNG market. So again, this feeds back into the downward pressure on prices. So as a consequence, we've seen JKM as the Asian benchmark fall throughout the winter from October onwards, just as in Europe, we've seen the TTF fall during that period as well.
So that's the demand side. I mean, what's happened on the supply side for LNG? Have we seen many new projects coming online?
Not much at the moment, and not much due to come on this year in calendar year 2024. So at the moment, we're still in the stage of incremental growth in terms of new projects. The good news, obviously, over the past winter was the return of Freeport in the US. So there you've seen year-on-year increase there. Although, again, that was, you know, somewhat affected by maintenance during Q1. So they had winter storms over there that meant that one train was taken offline for checks and repairs. And then when that train was brought back on, trains 2 and 3 were also taken offline just to check that similar damage hadn't occurred. So there are little sort of tweaks going on around. But really, we're still in a stage of incremental growth in terms of just, you know, small projects being added in terms of new supply, maybe some extra volumes being squeezed out of existing liquefaction capacity, as we've seen, for example, out of Russia. But really, we're looking at next year when the start of the much vaunted LNG wave starts to hit. But again, that will probably, given the ramp ups needed for those new projects, take effect really from the second half of the year onwards. So if I was to look ahead for the next 12 to 18 months, I would say that the winter of 2024-25 might be the last one where Europe really needs to make sure that we have plenty in storage, take a deep breath and hope for a mild winter, especially given something I didn't mention earlier, that we expect gas transit via Ukraine to come to an end at the end of the calendar year. So I would say this coming summer, we know what we need to do in terms of restocking storage. The next coming winter is the last one where the global LNG market doesn't yet have access to that wave of new supply.
Okay, thanks. I mean, you're throwing in a little bombshell there just for which we'll have to explore further on Ukraine supply. So we'll come back to that. But before we do that, Anouk, let me come back to you. You know, Jack's describing a situation there where supply, certainly LNG supply, is relatively kind of flat stroke growing slowly. So we come back then to the prospects for European demand over the summer and the rest of 2024. I wonder if we can explore, I mean, you've mentioned all three sectors so far. Let's just explore them in turn. What about the power sector this year? Are we going to see similar trends to 23 or are we seeing something different?
Very similar trends this year compared to last year, which means the main driver producing the same effect. The main drivers being low electricity demand due to energy savings and economic slowdown, improved renewable capacity and therefore availability, and still the progressive return of the French nuclear fleet, hopefully in line with EDF target. And all these would suggest an overall weak gas demand in 2024. Incidentally, Q1 was already 7% down year on year. Having said that, probably one or two things to keep on your radar. First, days with low wind availability will undoubtedly mark a short-term spike in gas use. And second, if electricity demand picks up, then gas plants may be needed to replace some of the planned coal phase power capacity, phase out of coal capacity, which is around 15 gigawatt this year in the next few months. And that, again, will especially be important during cold days. However, with the economic forecast being what they are at the moment and being revised down, a sudden recovery in electricity consumption is fairly unlikely in the next few months in Europe.
With that sort of those sort of rather bleak economic forecasts, let's come on to the industrial sector then. You've already talked about the kind of key industries there in terms of destruction or reduction. But what are the signs in 2024 about what's happening now?
A very interesting story. We had some signs, timid signs, but some signs of year-over-year rebound in Q3 and Q4 2023. So we were keeping an eye on that. Now, this rebound seems to have receded. In Q1 2024, I give it to you, industrial gas demand was up by about 4% year-on-year, but arguably this was largely the result of cold temperatures in January. For the rest of the year, it's pretty much the same conclusion I was giving you a few months ago, which are considering the trends in the EU manufacturing output, which fell in 2023 after two consecutive years of recovery following the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, and considering the general worsening of the economic outlook in Europe, it really seems that gas demand for end products, and that means rather than the level of gas prices, so the demand for end products is going to be the key driver in the next few months, and as a result, place a cap on any sort of industrial gas demand recovery we could hope to see in 2024.
Okay, so not a particularly positive outlook there. I mean, residential and commercial, I mean, is that really all driven by weather? We've seen a couple of warm winters. I mean, the forecast for this year, I guess, depend very much on how you see the temperatures next winter. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's still the largest uncertainty regarding year-on-year variations in gas consumption. It's not just temperature. It's also the sort of consumer behavior that we've seen over the past two winters has been quite important. In Q1, we had very cold days in January that showed us that the consumers' willingness to reduce their energy has been somewhat eroded compared to last winter, especially during the very cold days. But luckily, we also had very, very mild temperatures in February and March. So all in all, in Q1, the residential and commercial sector was down by about 2%. Now, as you mentioned, unless we do have a very cold temperature at the end of the year, which could happen, but is whether it's going to be much more important than last winter, it's unlikely. It's very unlikely. So I do expect that the overall gas demand in this sector in 2024 to be relatively flat and driven by the commercial sector, or it could even be slightly down if the commercial sector does not pick up quite strongly.
Okay, well, let's pull this all together then. I mean, you know, what are your main conclusions, and are there some scenarios you've got? What are the kind of events that could push us one way or the other?
As I like to say, still a lot of moving pieces to the puzzle. I probably say that at every podcast, but that's the case. But the overall gas demand in 2024, the main message is that it's likely to be at best nearly flat year on year, with the limited use of gas in the power sector fairly unlikely to be counterbalanced by higher gas demand in the other sectors. Although it could be that a modest rebound in the industrial gas consumption could happen, especially in Central and Eastern Europe, where the latest economic forecast do anticipate higher GDP growth for 2024 in these countries. In addition to that, we are seeing higher import costs that could trigger some rebound in domestic ammonia production. To be honest, gas demand in the other intensive sectors is going to remain weak. So, all right, alternative scenarios or possible black swans, as we call them in the quarterly. First, higher than expected economic growth in some Western European countries, and or a severely cold weather for a prolonged period at the end of the year, which could boost the use of gas for heating, and that's even assuming that consumer demand restraint continues to some extent, even in the context of lower gas prices. Now, both of these events would also trigger higher electricity demand around Europe. And if you remember what I said, higher electricity demand could potentially trigger higher use of gas in power generation, especially because we do see some coal plants being phased out this year. And during cold days, that could be very, very important.
Okay, that's interesting. So, I mean, although there are some potential triggers that they don't look desperately likely. I mean, obviously the weather we can't really forecast, but so demand pretty flat then at best. Jack, let me come back to you then and sort of complete the circle, if you like, by looking at prospects for European supply over 2024. You've talked about LNG supply in the world being, rising, but only very slowly. What about other forms of European supply? And particularly, perhaps you could just spend a couple of minutes on that Ukraine transit issue.
First and foremost, actually, storage is going to be an interesting one this summer. So between April and September 2023, Europe injected 43 BCM in storage. Doing that again this summer will bring stocks back to full capacity. But we have to remember that European storage replenishment last year also had a further 4.35 BCM that was injected between the 1st of October and the 6th of November. So if we repeat the injections of 43 BCM that we saw between April and September last year, that's going to take us back to tank tops before October even begins. So in reality, I think we're going to see storage injections slightly slower year on year and just see a gradual convergence in terms of stock levels as we go through the summer, a convergence with this year versus last year. Given that we're going to see a slower decline in European production, pipeline supply probably higher year on year because we're not going to have that substantial Norwegian maintenance. As I mentioned, slower storage injections, and as Anouk has just said, demand that's either flat or lower, then actually to bring it back to the marginal source of supply, I think we could actually see a year-on-year decline in European LNG imports. Now, if you look at the ripple effect of that into the wider global market, it means that other buyers can absorb any incremental growth in supply that we're going to see this summer. If demand in Northeast Asia remains relatively sluggish, then that opens up possibility of China's rebound to continue, rapid growth in small markets in Southeast Asia. But it also has quite a sort of a downward pressure on prices. So I think something to maybe look for over the summer is just how rapidly Europe refills its storage. If we make a really rapid replenishment in the first half of the summer, then you increase the risk that we really do hit tank tops by the end of September, and you have potentially October in a month that you would normally be using for continued storage injections. Having no space for that, you haven't got the winter demand starting to pick up. So you could see some real softness in prices towards the back end of the summer. Conversely, if storage replenishment goes a bit more slowly during the summer months, then on the one hand, you reduce the risk of real softness in prices in the late summer. But of course, because you're injecting less, it's effectively taking away from European demand in the early part of summer, so making early summer prices a little bit softer than they might otherwise have been. So again, exactly as Anouk says, many moving parts, But certainly what happens in Europe is going to have a ripple effect out into the wider global LNG market under conditions of only incremental growth in supply and a question of how much growth you can see in other markets.
And just to, we're coming to the end of our time now, just to sort of round off, the one black swan event, which you've mentioned already, is this kind of question of Ukraine transit. If the market starts to anticipate that we're going to lose that 12-13 BCM through Ukraine from the 1st of January 25, what impact do you think that has on the kind of prices as we go through the second half of the year? And do you think it starts to ramp up concern, or do you think it's already priced in? Just briefly on that.
I think it's already priced in. I think we're already going to be hitting tank tops by the start of winter anyway. So it's not as though Europe can put more into its own sort of EU27 storage to guard against that. So the one thing I would say is keep an eye on the utilization of Ukrainian storage for two reasons. Firstly, as an overflow, if you like, in a soft late summer market in Europe, but also as a provision of security of supply for Ukraine itself. Because, of course, if the transit stops, the Central European market tightens in Q1, it's harder for them to physically import. They lose the option to do their backhaul imports. And that's why I think it's also important to keep an eye on the Russian military targeting the surface infrastructure of some of these Ukrainian storage facilities, possibly as a means of dissuading people, whether Ukrainian or European, from using those facilities. That dissuading hasn't happened yet, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Okay, that's great. Well, look, thanks, Jack. Thanks, Anouk. That was a really interesting and detailed analysis of what's going on in the global gas market, obviously with a focus on Europe. That's been very helpful. If you want more detail and you want to see some of the many graphs that are in the quarterly, then please do download that from our website. It's there now. But for the time being, again, Jack and Anouk, thanks very much. I hope that you, the listeners, have enjoyed this discussion. There'll be another one from the Gas Programme in a couple of weeks' time. But until then, please take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.